It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing. I feel
it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
First Cut.
Golly. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Players Championship. And joining me to break it all down, Sia Najad is here. Sia, welcome in.
I told you, Rick. I told you last week, Kurt Kitayama was winning it all. You remember me saying that? Do you remember that time that I said that?
I don't remember that.
I don't remember it either. I was hoping you'd remember.
No, I don't remember a lot of things. So you could have probably passed that off as actually happening. A week might as well be a year ago in my brain.
That's totally fair. Well, we've got a nice little tournament coming up. So I've pretty much erased everything from last week other than the strokes gain metrics that I saw on your website, Rick.
Oh, why, thank you. Speaking of tournaments, I'm under the impression it is March. I'm under the impression that we get the match play bracket for that event in a couple of weeks. But I'm also under the impression, see, have you ever heard of this? They call it March Madness. It's like an amateur college like hoops thing. I don't know.
I think it's softball. Yeah, I've heard of it. I think apparently it's pretty exciting. You fill out brackets or something and you might win money or prizes, something like that.
Generally quite popular. So we will again partake in a little bit of bracket challenge here on the First Cut. I cannot remember what the prize was last year, but we gave out something to the winner. That bracket challenge sign up is now open. So link in the description for the bracket challenge. You can take us all on and see if you can beat us with your college basketball knowledge, which I imagine you can, because I have zero idea what's going on. That's in the description. Also, the link for the fans to get their one and done vote in, also in the description. So the fans, hey, take a minute. A lot of stuff down there for you to check out.
Yeah. By the way, Rick, apologies to the one and done First Cut world. It is true that I, in fact, almost didn't get my pick in last week as well. But you know what's funny? You want to hear something funny? I mean, it was Scheffler who I put in first, and then I quickly changed it, like within seconds, and I switched it to Homa. So that was a miss on my part, along with almost missing the deadline.
The only consolation was that in most one and dones, no one had Kurt Kitayama. There was a lot of like that log jam behind him where a lot of popular guys got 800K, or if you went with Rory, you got the 1.7. But luckily, it wasn't just some chalky guy winning 3.6 million.
Yeah. I mean, did anybody? Yeah, certainly nobody in the world of one and done, however many entries there are, it's pretty safe to assume like literally not a single person had Kurt Kitayama.
I bet you somebody somewhere did. I didn't see it, but
that somebody has already decided they're out of the one and done and they're just like trying to be funny and ridiculous.
It's like Kurt's mom picked him and got the 3.6 million bucks. This week, how about 4.5 up top? TPC Sawgrass, the Players Championship. Troy, if you could share my screen, that'd be absolutely splendid. We'll show my website, rickrungood.com. Here's the golf course. Well known, one of the most recognizable golf courses on planet Earth. It's a Pete Dye design, and everybody who's anybody is going to be teeing it up this week, Sia. So what types of golfers do we think are best suited to tackle this golf course?
So I think there's a number of types of golfers that can attack this course quite successfully. And we've seen that with some of the winners and top 10 leaderboards over the last few years in particular. What I can tell you I'm looking for is some similar stuff from last week, particularly when it comes to greens and regulation, tee to green and things of that nature. But for me, it's a ball striker. I mean, I see on the model here that strokes gained off the tee is pretty important. In fact, the most correlated, if you will. That's something that is of interest to me, but I'm just looking at ball striking as a whole. And really my emphasis is going to be more on approach than anything else. So, you know, I think staying in the fairway, kind of staying out of trouble with water being everywhere on this course, that's going to be paramount to me. And that doesn't mean that guys that aren't good off the tee are going to be out of my player pool. It's just not a priority.
Well, the model, which has zero opinion and is strictly based on math, also loves the ball striking category. So strokes gained off the tee ranking seventh means there's only six other courses on the PGA Tour schedule where off the tee is more important. Strokes gained approach ranking ninth means there's only eight other courses in which strokes gained approach is more correlated to success. And those two things kind of stand alone, Sia. The rest are kind of average stats around the green, distance, accuracy. They're all fine, but those historically have been much more average. The other thing I want to consider, a couple things I want to consider, par five scoring has generally been a through line to success at this golf course. You'll see it show up here, whether it's long approaches, going for the green, par five scoring average, those types of statistics, because those are kind of the gettable opportunities around Sawgrass, not only passes the sniff test, but also the math bears it out as well.
Yeah, and that's something I've added a smaller weight to in my model. And so if I can marry strokes gained par five, for example, or just par five scoring with ball striking and with greens in regulation, and I can get guys who are measuring out quite well in all three of those categories, I found guys for my player pool.
Here's the scorecard if you're watching on YouTube. So you can see the 72 par broken down into 7,275 yards on that scorecard. Two fives on the front, two fives on the back, two threes on the front, two threes on the back. Very standard par 72 setup around TPC Sawgrass. The other thing to keep in mind, Sia, especially as we start talking through the player pool, is that historically, this is a very, very volatile golf tournament, whether it is wind that rolls in, or even if you don't have the wind, it's just water everywhere. We have seen some of the highest owned golfers, some of the most expensive golfers, miss the cut more frequently at this event than many other events on the schedule. So does that change the way you start generating lineups for this week?
It kind of does. And I don't want to necessarily sort of take the most obvious and easy road out when it comes to getting guys in my player pool. But if I'm looking for consistent ball strikers, you know, whether it's short term or long term, to me, there are guys in that mid 7K range in particular that are probably going to be pretty popular, but that I can kind of guarantee are pretty much going to keep it in the fairway. Greens and regulation are going to be really good. And I'm talking about, and we'll get to this, but guys like Keegan Bradley, guys like Corey Connors, even Tom Hoge is somebody I'm interested in. Maybe Tommy Fleetwood. Like, that 7K range has so many sort of positional plotters, kind of safe plays that, because of the volatility here, that safe route, which would normally get you like a T21 or something, well, some of those guys might be falling that are normally in normal tournaments that are normally up at the top. I just wonder if all those guys that I'm talking about, instead of being in that T20 range, are all of a sudden in the T10, T12 range because they're just not making the mistakes. And if that's the case, then that's the route I want to take.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's start naming names. We'll go through the cheat sheet and start at the top of the pricing and work our way all the way down to the bottom. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
And we're back. Here's the cheat sheet. Four golfers over $10,000. John Rahm leads the way, 11-8. Rory McIlroy, $11,000 flat. Scottie Scheffler, 10-6. Xander Schauffele, 10,000. It's the big three and Xander, Sia. So where do we want to spend our big bucks at the top of the board?
It's funny, right? The big three in Xander. Like, I think we all, when we saw, and it's no disrespect to Xander, but he's certainly not in the class of the top three. Granted, he's the fourth priced guy, but it was a little kind of staggering for me to see him in the 10K range with those other three guys. This is really hard, right? I mean, these top three guys, listen, I'm not playing Xander. If you want to get cute and just say to yourself, well, not many people are paying $10,000 for Xander because they'll either drop down or they'll take one of these three guys up top. Feel free to do that. It's just not, that's not going to be my strategy for Xander this week. Rorty and Scotty, and this has nothing to do with Rom kind of, you know, just kind of giving it away last week a little bit. Rory and Scotty are jumping out at me a little bit. Between the two, I really like what I'm seeing from Rory specifically. I mean, obviously, all three are amazing. Rory, obviously, he won this in 2019. The ball striking is so good, and when the hot putter comes around, which it comes around pretty often for him, the guy's unstoppable. And so this is one of the few tournaments where between those three, I'm probably on Rory rather than Rom or Scotty.
He's gained at least 10 strokes to the field in 7 of his last 9. He gained strokes putting being back in Florida last week. And obviously the great results around the Players' Championship. I'll pull up Scotty's profile here, Sia, because the argument that I made on my YouTube channel this morning was basically, if you just handed me everyone's stat profile and removed the salaries and positions and fantasy points and names and headshots, I think the Scottie Scheffler stat profile would be my favorite. Like that'd be the guy that I'd say, okay, this feels like the combination of high floor and high ceiling, which is very, very rare. He's basically the best tee to green player in the last year. Him and Rory McIlroy are 1 and 2. And he still feels like he has room to grow. I mean, the putter hasn't been particularly great. He missed a 7-footer on 1 on Sunday and a 7-footer on 18. Those are 2 coin flips. And if those 2 coin flips go his way, he's in the playoff last week. And yeah, maybe it's not Kurt Kitayama that wins this golf tournament.
That's absolutely right. I mean, he's one of many that kind of left a lot on the table, like on the back nine. I mean, I had Hovland, I had Hatton, and as they were sort of rounding the turn, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in really good position here. And Scheffler's one of those guys that, you know, you could definitely say could have won the tournament. Again, you're kind of splitting hairs here when it comes to Scheffler and Rory and Rom. I like this. I think, you know, on this course, you could be kind of like middling putting-wise, which Scheffler has been lately, and really find a hot putter here. So even though I think Rory has the edge there and Rom has the edge, I could see Scotty having a great putting day. It's just 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. So again, if I'm prioritizing, it's Rory, Scotty, and then Rom, but the margins are so close between the three.
How concerned are we about the 6 strokes that John Rahm lost off the tee at Bay Hill? The majority of it, I think 3.5 of it came on number 6 alone throughout the week, couple of balls in the drink there. The rest of his game was fine. I would like to see his approach play a little bit better, but the short game was stout. Is this prime for a bounce back or something to tread lightly with?
Well, I think it's prime for a bounce back, but I mean, it is interesting if we are going to split hairs here. I mean, the off the tee game hasn't been quite as pristine as it was, let's say, in the fall. I mean, it's, you know, he obviously lost off the tee, but even prior to that, barely a gainer off the tee. And then, you know, 2 to 3 strokes prior to that, which for John Rahm isn't necessarily great. So, I mean, I think if you want to try to find a flaw, that's where it is. But in terms of whether he's going to bounce back or not, I mean, I think it all comes down to his ball striking, but his approach game, we saw it just at the Genesis Invitational. I mean, he gained almost 12 strokes on approach. If he does anything close to that here, he's going to win the tournament, obviously. So I'm not super concerned about the ball striking as a whole.
Yeah, just to put a bow on the rest of this 10K range, here's Xander's profile. It's fine. You know, a couple of finishes in the 30s at Riviera and at Bay Hill. He was a little bit better before that. He's still very clearly a well-rounded top-tier golfer. You just kind of have to decide where and how he fits into your lineups, which, you know, early in the week, I think a lot of people are saying one of the big three or coming out and diving into this 9K range. See, is Xander just going to be the overlooked guy here?
Probably. And you know how this industry works. It's gotten pretty sophisticated. So they're going to see ownership come out, you know, that's going to start like peddling out. And it'll probably come out a little sooner, right, Rick? Because we had these, you know, lineups are being made a little bit sooner. But the point is, they're going to see that Xander has been completely overlooked. So some people will jump on Xander. But like I said, I like that strategy of just kind of going to a top tier guy that is marginally owned. But in this case, I don't. Like, in this case, I'll get different other places. I'm not going to get different with Xander as opposed to dropping down to the 9K range, which there's so many guys I love, or going up to one of those big three that we talked about.
I did just want to see. So Rahm's 11.8. Sometimes for these bigger events, you get softer pricing, which we haven't. Not really the case here. And maybe it's because the pricing came out early, but the, I mean, 11.8 is the most expensive John Rahm has been. Boy. Since the 2021 Fortinet. So we did not necessarily get that super soft pricing that sometimes we see at majors and the players.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's why we're going to see some collection areas, no pun intended, with a lot of like certain pricing tiers that people are just going to gravitate to, because they're going to want to take an expensive Rahm, Scotty, or let's say Rory McIlroy, and then they're maybe going to want to take a 9K guy. What that's going to leave them with is like the mid 7K range. And so what that leaves them with is some of the chalky guys I talked about, some of those good ball strikers. So that's just something to keep in mind. I'm not necessarily pivoting away from all of those guys, but keep in mind that it's going to be very easy for people to put some of those premier ball strikers who are having really good recent form in the 7K range into their lineup. So again, consider maybe at least a couple of pivots in that range.
The 9K range. Max Homa leads it off, 9,900. Patrick Cantlay is 97. Colin Morikawa at 95. JT at 94. Then the final two are Tony Finau at 9,200 and Sung Jae-im at a flat 9,000. So this is that 1B group, or whatever you want to call it, of guys that everybody's probably licking their chops at, think, hey, there's a lot of win expectancy here, a lot of win equity. Where do we go if we want to start here?
What's interesting is I think the licking their chops category belongs for once to the 8K range as opposed to the 9K range, which we'll get to, because I mean, I genuinely think you can put a lot of these 8K guys in the 9K range, even in this field. So what that means for me is there's not a ton that I like. Like there's one guy that really jumps out to me that I was off of last week because my hunch was, and this is based on some of the stuff that, you know, I heard on the first cut, you know, not on the DFS show, but when I was listening to you, Rick, and Mark Immelman being out at these tournaments and hearing about Colin Morikawa in the wind, I was, you know, and then seeing the metrics to back it up, I was a little fearful of that in terms of his recent form. So I was off him last week, but the wind doesn't look like it's going to be. And by the way, maybe that's just an outlier thing that I'm like, maybe that's not really high impact on Colin Morikawa, but I'm just giving you the reason I wasn't on him last week. And I was on, you know, what his counterpart, Victor Hovland. This week, I like Hovland, but I really like Colin Morikawa too. Love the ball striking. What's interesting here is his history isn't very good, but in 2021, he gained almost 7 strokes ball striking, which is pretty significant. The only reason he wasn't very good is because he lost over 4 strokes with the short game. So we know how volatile like the short game in general can be with anybody, including Colin Morikawa. So I think the ball striking is going to be great. The wind's not super high, so that sort of hidden fear I have about him isn't really there. And don't forget, you know, it's funny, we have such short-term memory. 6th at the Genesis and 3rd at the Farmers. I mean, this guy is actually in good form. He's just having some really volatile stretches where he's just off the map completely. And we know what, like, I'm not into trends this way, but like he'll get a 3rd and then he'll miss a cut. Then he'll get a 6th and he'll miss a cut. Well, what happens this week? I think it's a good course fit. I like Colin.
I believe he was also 4 under in 2020 through that one round that they played. So don't forget about that, especially for the younger guys. I kind of lump Colin Morikawa into the Justin Thomas conversation. It's like, I've got a lot of questions. I'm not sure how many answers I have. I think I'm a smidge more likely to go back to Justin Thomas than I am Colin Morikawa, because I know his around the green play is going to be sharp. I like the way that his ball striking is trending. He was another one of these guys, Sia, that with, you know, 7 holes to go at Bay Hill, you're looking at this and saying, well, JT's in the mix again. And it didn't finish well for him, but he's kind of been lurking a little bit. I'm terrified of the putter. It is not good. It is really hard to watch. I think he needs like a complete overhaul there. But almost in spite of that, he is capable of getting some high-end finishes.
Yeah, and we've seen it here with him. We've seen the high-end finish in 2021, finishing in first, and the 11th in 2018, a 33rd in 2022. I don't mind Justin Thomas. I just tend to never play him, and I like that we're looking at the history here. You know, he's had some, obviously, you know, he had elite ball striking when he won, but it's been pretty good here, particularly with the short game. I just don't think I'm going to Justin Thomas. I think I'm only going to dabble in this 9K range. I'll probably go with like a Colin, and I might, you know, what's interesting here is Cantlay's experience and Tony Finau's experience. What I mean is their history here, it ain't great. So I'm not 100% sure what to do with that. I've kind of come off course history a little bit in terms of really emphasizing it, but it's hard to look away from what they've done here. Between those two, I probably will be peppering in a little bit of Patrick Cantlay, though.
Yeah, I would love a low-owned Patrick Cantlay, I believe. You know, he's made some equipment changes. He kind of talked through that a little bit and took him a little bit to get rolling, and now it's back-to-back, you know, top four finishes at Riviera and Arnold Palmer. I've seen the history, right? It's brutal. It's three straight missed cuts, but before that, it was two consecutive top 25 finishes. So if I can get a low-owned Patrick Cantlay, I'm interested. The guy who might just actually be the best one in this entire range we haven't spoken about, it's Max Homa. 11 strokes on the positive in ball striking last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He's kind of turning into that guy. And 1 week, it's gain 11 in the ball striking and finished T14. The week before that, it's gain 11 with the putter and finished runner-up. I mean, there's a lot of paths to the top of the board for Max Homa.
Yeah, and for some reason, we're not, you know, the community doesn't really put him in the category of, at least not yet, of the Colin Morikawas, of even the Victor Hovlands. I know some people do, but I just don't think he's thought of in that way. And so when you look at his price at 9,900, which, correct me if I'm wrong, was the same exact price as last week, I just don't think people are going to be in love with that price because, again, they're going to go up to one of the big three, or they're going to try to go down to, like, let's say a Colin or just a Tony Finau or just get into that 8K range. I wonder, his ownership's not going to be super low by any means, but you're right. This is the profile, right? He's the ball striking has been really good, but especially last week. And we know just from two tournaments ago when he was second place at the Genesis, he gained over 11 with the putter. So it's the right combination of things that we've seen recently for him to just absolutely take down a tournament. I remember because I had home in the one and done last week, and I felt like he hit it to 7 feet on every hole and he just kept missing the putt. And I'm like, man, this is not the Max Homa I know. I like, what's going on here? So I fully expect him to rebound from that.
He has been either $99 or $9,700 for four straight weeks. So Max Homa carving himself out a little bit of a niche there. Let's continue this conversation. Sia has already alluded to the fact that he thinks the 8K range might be the best range. We'll talk about them, the sevens, the sixes, and much more. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
And we're back. The eights, Victor Hovland, $8,900. Will Zalatoris, Jordan Spieth, Matt Fitzpatrick. Cam Young sits right in the middle at $8,500. And then the bottom, Hideki, Terrell, Shane Lowry, Tom Kim, one Jason Day. Sia, you've teased this area of the board. Let's dive into it a little bit further.
There's so many good players here. I mean, I think you could make an entire line. I mean, I'm not recommending it. I think you could make an entire lineup with this range and be kind of okay. So let's start with Victor Hovland. You know, I got away from him a little bit last week, and you remember on the DFS show, I was in love with Hovland. I mean, we were talking about how he's ready to pop and he's ready to win and the trajectory is good. And, you know, his results over at the API were good. He ended up being in the quote wrong wave. So I got away from him a little bit, which was of course ended up being a mistake. But speaking of waves, I just want to point out, it doesn't look like the wind is going to be crazy, and it's just Monday, but it does look like to the extent there's any advantage whatsoever, again, on a Monday, I'm saying PM, AM, Thursday PM, Friday AM looks to be a very slight advantage, but not one right now that I would pay much attention to, if any. So my larger point in making that statement is I don't think we need to worry about wind waves too much. Again, here on a Monday, we'll reassess on Wednesday. But Victor Hovland, ninth year last year, ball striking is exactly where we want it to be. So I like him quite a bit yet again. I'll point out Will Zalatoris. This to me, him and Victor Hovland feel like slight misprices here. And I know they're not really misprices because everybody has to go into a certain slot. But if you told me that going into this tournament without seeing anything else, that Victor Hovland was 9,300 and Will Zalatoris was either 92 or 9,400, I'd be like, yeah, that totally makes sense. So I think that's tremendous value on Will Zalatoris. 26th and 21st here so far. Bad API finish, but we're only 3 weeks removed from him being top five at the Genesis. So we know Zalatoris is pretty much back. If we're worrying about the back injury from before, nothing to worry about there. I'll point out a couple other names.
Yeah, before you do, just two elite ball strikers that you've pointed out there. Zalatoris, 14 strokes ball striking in his last two trips to Sawgrass, plus 5.5 at Bay Hill, 7.8 at Riviera. And then Victor's been on this upward trajectory of ball striking statistics for 4 or 5 weeks now, culminating with 10 last week at Bay Hill. But also remember, he led the field here last year, gained like 14 strokes ball striking. It was like 2.5 more than anybody else. So those are certainly. I think they're riskier options because they might just like lose five strokes in the short game categories. But they are elite ball strikers going to places they have generally dismantled with the ball striking.
Right. And we've seen them. So what's interesting is if you look round by round, yeah, of course you're going to see more rounds. Like let's take Hovland, for example, where around the green, it's not very good, but there are some rounds where his around the green game, he's gaining and he's fine. So, I mean, you're playing the volatility here a little bit when it comes to short game and Victor Hovland, but don't forget there are rounds where he's great with the short game. So it's one of those things where I'm willing to take the gamble, particularly when we have such an elite ball striker and a guy who absolutely, and it was in spite of the around the green game perhaps, but he absolutely could have won last week along with a number of guys.
Both Thursday morning guys are actually in back-to-back tee times off the first tee. Hovland 9:34 with Fitzpatrick and Lowry. Zalatoris the next group with Xander and Kirk Kitayama gets himself a big time featured group fresh off victory. Okay. Where are we headed next? See ya.
Yeah. So I'll mention, because I've been on these guys a little bit the last few weeks, I'll mention Tyrrell Hatton and Shane Lowry. I think those are both really good plays. They'll probably carry a little bit of popularity, but I really want to address two other guys. Tom Kim, because I think he'll get kind of squeezed here. Because I just, with the lack of experience and him just kind of being a little bit down in the ball striking and putting departments, I don't think people are going to be super interested in playing him. But to me, he's a great course fit. And the upside to me is still there, both with the ball striking and the putting. So if he's going to be relatively forgotten, particularly because there's so many other good 8K guys right next to him, I'm happy to jump in on Tom Kim at 8,100. Go ahead. Yeah,
it's not like he's been bad. He's just hasn't won two out of every nine starts, which is like what he was doing when he first broke onto the scene. So the metrics are still generally positive. There's a lot of guys that would love these results.
Absolutely. And part of that, by the way, I mean, the metrics might just be dipping too, because the talent, especially over the last handful of tournaments, has been a little bit better. But I think the potential for Tom Kim is exactly what we thought it was 2 and 3 and 4 months ago. So I'm very much happy to speculate on him at 8,100, particularly on this course. The other guy, and I think this guy's going to be pretty popular along with Hatton and Lowry, Jason Day. Recent history, course history. I'm not sure what's not to like. I'm not sure what you could possibly criticize here. We talked about him a lot last week. Putter has been on fire. Ball striking has been very good. Only minor criticism is the approach hasn't really been elite. But when you contrast the lack of elite approach play, if that's what you want to call it, with his finishing positions, I'll just give you the last handful. T10, T9, 5th, T7, T18. He had a miscut in there, T16, T21, T11, T8. I mean, he's basically a top 15 machine. And honestly, at 8,000, If you didn't have a name next to this, just let's look at the finishing positions alone. And you said, this is Xander Schauffele at 10,000. We'd all buy it, right? And that's not a criticism of Xander Schauffele. It's more of a compliment on Jason Day. But why isn't this an elite golfer's, not a Rory McIlroy, but why isn't this an elite golfer's profile? And he's only 8,000. I just really like Jason Day.
Last 36 rounds, everybody in this field, there's only four golfers who have gained at least two strokes per round. Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Jason Day. So the big three and J Day, I don't need to remind you that the big three are all $10,600 or more expensive. Jason Day, $8,000. So yes, I believe he will be popular. It is very well warranted. Anybody else in this $8,000 range? You know, Hideki's been weird. He hasn't played well. He was leading this in 2020 when they canceled it after one round. Like, is there anybody else in this 8K range, or are those the guys?
I mean, I think I didn't really talk about Hatton or Lowry. I mean, they're definitely in play, but I think Cameron Young is at least interesting because of how he flashed last week. I don't think I'm going to be making the dive back in on Cameron Young, and it's not because I don't like him, but it's because I like those other guys so much more. I mean, there's this 8K range is so rich that it's really hard to get to your, like, fourth or fifth favorite guy, even though it might be a guy you really like.
Speaking of, if you just handed me stat profiles and I saw seven strokes gained ball striking, but losing around the green and losing with the putter, then seven strokes gained ball striking, but gaining with the putter and losing, or excuse me, gaining around the green, but losing with the putter, I'd be like, oh my God, we're trending towards seven strokes gained in the ball striking, plus 2.5 around the green, plus 2 with the putter. And this golf tournament is Cam Young's.
Yeah. It's a good profile.
He's like plugging the leaks.
Yeah, and this is a guy we addressed a little bit last week just from a pure upside standpoint. And we saw, you know, at least for a few rounds, we saw the upside there. I mean, this is a guy that we know is going to reach his potential. It's just a matter of when.
Has he played? He did. He played this last year. He missed the cut. Very ugly. Although I could just assume he was in the bad wave. I have no idea if he was in the bad wave or not. There was like a three stroke difference between AM PM last year, and a lot of guys got wiped. The 7K range, this is obviously much larger. Chris Kirk, Tommy Fleetwood, Matt McNealy, Sam Burns near the top, all the way down at $7,000 flat. Cam Davis, Christian Bezuidenhout, Gary Woodland, Harris English had a good week last week, amongst others. So lots of names here. See, let's pick a couple off and chat about them.
Yeah, first of all, I think Tommy Fleetwood is a pretty good option, but I'm just going to skip over him for now. I like Keegan Bradley, and that shouldn't be news to anybody. I think a lot of people are going to like him. Recent history, course history, ball striking. If you go back 20 tournaments, he's gaining with the putter about half the time. So, like, the putter is definitely it can pop. And for the record, in the tournaments where he's not gaining with the putter, and I'm going back to that 20 tournament sample size, he's kind of missing the cut. So I actually think there's a little bit more volatility in Keegan Bradley than people might think. But I also think the upside is absolutely there. Second at the Farmers, first at the Zozo, T10 at the API just last week. So I like Keegan quite a bit at 7,500.
There's nobody. So Keegan has played in the last five editions of the Players Championship every possible round, which means he's made the cut in all five. He has not gotten MDF. Remember, that used to be a thing where they'd make a secondary cut after Saturday if too many guys made the cut. And his history here is fifth last year, T29, T16, T7. So that's four straight top 30s. Three of them were 16th or better. And then a T60 in 2017. And you could argue he's probably playing the best golf of his career, or at least close to it right now. So yeah, that's certainly a convergence of trends on Keegan.
And I feel like we think about Keegan Bradley in a certain way that isn't super favorable to him. And what I mean by that is, I think at this point you can make Keegan Bradley like 7,900, and that would make complete sense. So, like, put him where Tommy Fleetwood is, for example. So I like Keegan quite a bit at 7,500. I think he makes a ton of sense. He's probably going to be one of the more popular guys in the 7K range. Corey Connor's another guy that was really good last week. He's been a big gainer ball striking all three times he's played here. He's gained with the putter two out of three that he's played here. He fits the ball striking profile that I'm looking for. And dating back to last summer, he's gained ball striking in 11 out of 12 tournaments, which shouldn't be a super shock to anybody. But if the putter is a zero putter, Corey Connors is going to outpace this price by quite a bit. So I like Corey Connors. He fits in the same mold as Keegan Bradley, both with how they've played here and recent form. I'll name two other guys. One's obvious and one not so obvious. Tom Hoagie at 7,400, I think, is the more obvious play because he's been bad off the tee, mind you, but he can be so dialed in on approach. And he's gained with the putter 3 out of 4 times here. So that's something, there's something to be said for that. He's lost off the tee 2 of the 4 times that he's played here. But what's interesting about that is those 2 times he was still inside the top 30. So he can be a loser off the tee here. He can be dialed in on approach and decent with the putter and still top 30 this thing at 7,400. I really, really like that particular type of trend because I think he has the upside to also top 15 this tournament, if not better. The last guy I'll mention, and this is a guy I've kind of been laboring over the last few hours. It's a guy I've been on quite a bit, but I didn't necessarily like him for this course. It's Wyndham Clark. You know, if you look at his history here, it's really bad, the ball striking history. But back then, he was such a different player than he is now. Back then, he wasn't gaining on approach at an elite level like he is now. To me, it's a completely different player. And when you actually look at his approach game leading into those tournaments where he did poorly in 2022 and 2021, it wasn't like it was trending well and, you know, and then he just crashed and burned on approach here. So the contrast I'm making is he just hasn't been good on approach until recently. He's gained on approach 7 out of the last 8 and in a very significant way. So I think Wyndham Clark is a really sneaky play because a lot of people are going to want to pay up for some of the guys I just talked about, or they're going to want to pay down for some of those upper 6K guys like Kurt Kitayama, for example, or Jonathan Vegas. I don't think anybody's going to be really paying attention to Wyndham Clark.
Yeah, it's been an impressive run for him. You know, he hasn't missed a cut since Shriners. He's played a lot. He's got a handful of top 20s in there, and they've come at bigger events like in Phoenix, and he held his own at Riviera and Bay Hill. I've been quite impressed with Wyndham Clark. I thought there were a couple other names, at least one. I'll show the Ricky Fowler profile, obviously, as a former champion here and now playing some of his best golf in recent memory. You can see he's gained strokes on approach every event of this season. The only one that we don't have measured numbers on is the Zozo, but he finished runner-up that week, so like we can assume he gained strokes on approach and he gained strokes in the ball striking category, and the putter's certainly coming back. He's gained at least 4 strokes putting in 3 of his last 4. And then I think there was somebody else I wanted to point out. Maybe not. Maybe you got them all.
I'll tell you while you're looking. Ricky was one of the other guys I was going to mention. What kind of threw me off a little bit was that 3 of the last 4 times here, he's been like quite bad with the ball striking. You might say, well, that's Ricky the last 3 or 4 years, but that actually wasn't true with the API. My research going into the API was he was actually really good with the ball striking the last 2 times he played there. Coming here, it's been pretty bad. And I just wonder if just for whatever reason, it's not a good look for him. But listen, I agree with you. I love how Ricky Fowler is trending and I don't mind him this week at all. Is the other name you were thinking of perhaps Keith Mitchell?
Yeah, Keith Mitchell. I think I've got one more as well. So here's his Players Championship history, T13. What you get from Keith is pretty on brand. He's just drives it really, really well. He gained 6 strokes at Bay Hill last week. He hasn't lost a tangible amount of strokes off the tee since Wells Fargo last year. I worry about the second shot. You know, he can get himself into position, which I think is going to help stay out of trouble and help give him a chance. But I need him to gain like 2 strokes on approach. If he can gain 2 strokes on approach, he's in this. It's not something he's always capable of doing. And then I believe Thomas Dietrich, he's a little bit cheaper. So he withdrew from Honda citing an illness, which whatever. If you just throw that out, he was right back at it again at Bay Hill, T24. He's got all this. I mean, this is just a great stretch of golf for him. He hasn't missed a cut outside of that WD since September. He's played a lot of golf. He's got a lot of high-end finishes. I just think he's a solid player, and people kind of got wiped at Honda because that was a weaker field and he was one of the bigger names. And I just am one to forgive quickly there.
Yeah, I don't mind that. And I don't want to just gloss completely over Tommy Fleetwood because I do like him and his history here in particular in terms of the ball striking, which I'm looking quite a bit at. It's been really good. Really, really good, actually. So I think Tommy Fleetwood is a pretty interesting play at 7,900.
There's Tommy Ladd's stat profile if you're watching on YouTube. $6,000. The top of it includes our champ from last week, Kurt Kitayama. Again, pricing came out. Obviously, I think it came out Friday night or Friday afternoon or Saturday. What would Kurt Kitayama's price be if DraftKings waited until Monday to release the pricing?
7,700.
Yeah. I was going to say 79. I was going to say like $1,000 more.
Mm-hmm. That's fair too.
So 6,900 bucks for Kitayami's there with like Nick Hardy, Taylor Moore, Will Gordon. And then the min price guys at the Players Championship. Let's see. Chad Ramey, Jerry Kelly, Max McGreevy. Aaron Baddeley's actually been pretty good recently. Yeah. 6,000 bucks. That's actually not the worst thing I've ever seen. Let's find some value here in the 6K range.
Baddeley at 6,000 is going to make it into like
let's look at this.
A random lineup of mine.
Here's Baddeley's stat profile. It's not bad. I mean, he missed the cut at Honda. He missed the cut at Torrey. Other than that, he's got, you know, a T37 at Pebble, T34 at Bay Hill last week. His Greg would say this is like a very pale, like
yes,
a very
I was
pale
thinking
profile,
the same thing.
Right? It's just like, yeah, he's fine. He's like slightly above average in most facets of his game. He's playing much better golf than we've kind of seen out of him recently. And I just think he is better than the other guys at $6,000.
Oh yeah, there's no question
about
that.
It's a low bar, but that's how I feel.
We should tweet at him that he's the min price because that's bulletin board material. Like he doesn't look like the type of guy to get mad, but maybe we can rile him up. Rick, tweet at him.
Let's check his Players Championship history before we get too excited about this. That is, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 missed cuts in his last 7. He did finish T6 here a dozen years ago. That maybe he can find some good vibes around this week. Yeah, I mean, listen, he's 6,000 for a reason, but I think he should be like 6,500. What else we got?
I mean, Kitayama is obviously interesting. I think he's going to have a lot of people's interest at 6,900, and it makes sense. I mean, he was really good last week. He, for the record, he did a lot of the damage with the short game as well, as opposed to just being a murderer on the ball striking, but just a really good tournament. He was completely locked in the whole time, and it's not the first time we've seen him be really good at golf, for the record. CJ Cup back in October, he was excellent pretty much everywhere. So I like him, but I think he's going to carry some ownership. That's fine if it's not completely out of control. It's part of the reason I like Wyndham Clark, because I think people will pay down for Kurt Kitayama, for example, or maybe a Jonathan Vegas, who I also like at 6,800. Vegas has some good and bad history here. But the strokes gain metrics as of late have been just off the charts. So, so good. If the putter's okay, he's going to be a great option. He's going to be, honestly, he's probably going to be one of my first round leader options. I think he can explode any given round. And he, for the record, hasn't lost ball striking since July. And there was a little bit in there where he was out with the shoulder injury and shoulder surgery, but the ball striking has been so good.
I'm actually impressed that when he came back from surgery, he was just like right back at it again. And maybe he took some extra time to get the game sharp, but like he really did not, from a statistical profile standpoint, did not miss a beat. You could, if I just showed you this and blacked out the dates, you would not be able to tell where the injury was, when the surgery occurred, and when he came. It's pretty strong.
It's really, really strong. So yeah, Vegas, Kurt Kitayama, a couple guys below that I think I'd be willing to actually put in lineups, as opposed to just like have, you know, sometimes in the 6K range, people just talk about a guy, but they're not actually going to play him. And I suppose I've been guilty of that too. But these two guys, I think I'm going to be willing to throw in a lineup or two. Robbie Shelton is one of them at 6,600. Played here once before with a miscut. I'm just glad he has experience here. So that's a checked box right there for me. I've been on him as of late. I love the ball striking. He's very good around the green as well. It's the putter that usually lets him down on this course. I think you can be a bad putter and still maybe be successful. So Robbie Shelton is just a train. I'm just going to continue to ride.
He's only missed two cuts in like his last 18 events. It was Sony and Mayakoba. Other than that, he's been great.
Right, exactly. He's the type of profile that he'll make the cut for you, and then there might be a disappearing act Saturday and Sunday. But again, I just love the potential here, and I think the profile fits really quite well for the Players. The other guy's Brandon Wu at 6,400. Three of his last four, the ball striking's actually been really good. It's the putter that's gotten him down as well. But he's shown upside. Let's say T14 at the Honda, a T2 at Pebble. He's just one of those guys that sometimes lurks around the top of the leaderboard, like even on a Saturday going into Sunday, and you're like, oh, Brandon Wu's having a nice tournament. I think we're going to see a little bit more of that. And so I think Brandon Wu at 6,400, if you want to speculate on somebody, I think that's a guy to speculate on.
The other one that I threw out there is Ryan Fox. Strong ball striker, finished T14 at API. He's got four consecutive top 20s now between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. And what I kind of like about this is there's always this conversation around these guys that, you know, are playing global golf and, oh, is this event too big for him and whatnot? He's played like 15 major championships. He's never played the Players, but like he's played the PGA, he's played the US Open, he's played the Open Championship a bunch. I'm not super worried about that. And he is $6,700 coming off a great week at Bay Hill.
I don't mind that. We have a New Zealander in the chat, and that's, of course, you know him, Rick. It's David Bileski. And, of course,
we're checking the chat.
Fox being from New Zealand as well. I know David has had an eye on him. The play's been a little erratic lately, but I think he's a fine play.
Sweet. Hey, David. All right. I think Nico Echeverria got in with his Puerto Rico Open victory last week, $6,100. Obviously playing well. Anything else? Anyone else here?
We had somebody point out in the chat, you know, Ben Martin is there. I'm a sucker for Ben Martin, but in this field, I don't really see it from him. Is it right that Davis Riley is 6,500? I saw that in the chat as well.
Yeah, I'll pull him up. So Ben Martin, T3, T5 at Pebble and Honda. Davis Riley is here, is coming off a T8 at Bay Hill. A great ball striking week, T29 at Honda after those missed cuts, which is something he kind of does. He's a very streaky golfer at this point.
Mm-hmm. And well, I mean, part of the T8 was gaining almost 5.5 strokes with the putter last week, but the ball striking was okay. And the previous tournament at Honda gained over 6 ball striking. Man, that putter that's pretty bad. We're in Emiliano Grillo territory at that point. Kyle Stanley stuff.
Nobody in Emiliano Grillo territory. First from tee to green last week. Dead last with the putter. Almost impossible to do.
So good.
All right, let us suspend all logic and reason. Let us do some strokes gain narrows. So if you've ever seen this before, if you're tuning in for the first time, we just have a little fun here at the end. And whatever the narrative is for the week, which the fans kind of make up and see where we go, they submit a lineup and then we read them here. And I have not even seen these. Sometimes I'll peruse the slides before. I'm going in dark here, Troy. So just throw them at me and we'll see what's happening here. Oh boy.
This first one's a doozy. I mean, this is probably not one to not have read beforehand because it's lyrics to a song by Jermaine Dupri and Ludacris called Welcome to Atlanta. Yeah, pretty much. And I promised everybody you practiced and that you would rap this today.
Well, that is a lie.
It is a lie.
So it's from Brent Harris. So he says it's his first musical contribution. So Brent, unfortunately, I'm not going to be rapping this, but it is set to the beat of Jermaine Dupri's Welcome to Atlanta. How does that go?
I mean, you actually expect me to hum it or sing it? Because that's not happening. It's a really catchy song, though. It's a good song.
Okay. So the original song goes, Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play.
That's right.
I don't know how the rest of it goes. Okay, this is quite catchy. Okay, so, you know, Brent has gone and he has swapped out Atlanta for Ponte Vedra. He's obviously using the players play. This is pretty strong. Brent, I'll tell you what, Brent, you record yourself rapping this and we'll play it on the show.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
That's fair.
Nice out, Rick. Getting the chat involved. I love it. Good for you.
Ryan at Fantasy Bunker. Oh, he's heading to Jacksonville. Or maybe he's not. Maybe we're heading to Jacksonville figuratively. Who didn't own? Oh, I did. Who didn't own a Jaguar starter jacket in the 90s? I had dude, the Jags with like Mark Brunell, and like I thought that when they first came into league, I thought that was the coolest thing to ever happen to my life.
Mark Brunell, Fred Taylor, I believe, was on
that
team.
Who was Fred Taylor the running back? Who was the other running back on that team? Did they have a fullback? Or am I just confusing him with confusing Mike Allstott, my other? Because I love the Bucks, like Warwick Dunn, Mike Allstott, when they were.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved that when they like redid the logos and the schemes.
See, Rick's a football guy. I don't think people know you're a football guy.
27 years ago or whatever that was.
What's funny is I saw something on the internet just real quick about they showed the Atlanta Falcons. It was on Twitter on the internet. What am I, 100?
Twitter is on the internet.
Yeah, so they showed the Falcons logo and they said, "What's the first player you think of?" And for some reason, my instead of Deion Sanders, my instinct was to say Warwick Dunn.
Yeah, that's what.
But of course, Warwick Dunn played with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well.
Yeah. All right. So Ryan says, so these are Oh, this is cool. So these are actually football teams and golfer crossover. So Johnny Las Vegas Raiders, Indianapolis Eric Colettes. Nice. Mackenzie Houston Oilers. Love Excellent. That. Philadelphia Peter Malnott Eagles. That was a stretch, but I liked it. Tennessee Woo Titans and Kansas CT Pan Chiefs.
That's great. Good well stuff done. From Ryan as usual.
Well done, Ryan. What else we got? Model Maniac. What used to be the strongest field in golf is no more after the LIV boys were banned. Now, he put that into quotes and spelled it B-A-N-D. So my hunch here is that these are going to be bans coming up, Sia. I believe that's fair to say.
Very good.
Justin's Guns and Roses. Doc Red Hot Chili Peppers. AC Dietry. That's good.
Elite.
That's elite. This one is as well. Jason Green Day. That's great. Cam Davis Matthews Band. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And Stuart Sink 182. Wow. I'm quite impressed by this.
This is a first ballot Hall of Famer. We have a lot in the Hall of Fame, and Markowski owns at least half of those that are
there's
in the
a
Hall
wing
of
for Markowski, but this is pretty good.
This is first ballot. There's no question about it.
Yeah, that's really, really strong. Congratulations. That's top-notch stuff there. John Markowski speaking of the devil. TPC Sawgrass, 17th Island Green. My must if stuck on a desert island. John is going to need plenty of KH2O Lee. He'd fashion an Adam Shank to fend off wild boars. Enough Eric Charcoal to fire up the Grillo. A Seamus power source to check those DraftKings scores. And James Hahn to keep me company with his rants. He could do that. He could absolutely do that. You can't afford him, John. You can't afford James Hahn on your deserted island. Is that it? Do we have more?
We have one more from Eric K. EK CBS. Hello.
Hello, Eric. I don't think I've ever called him Eric. Hello, EK. Is it too late for the annual? Wow. Players haters ball. How about this? Silky Siwoo Kim. Beautiful Billy Horschel. Hayden Buck Nest Lee. That's good. Aaron. How would you pronounce this? Aaron
Weiss-T.
Aaron Weiss-T. Right. Yeah. Like ice. Yeah. Right. Aaron Weiss-T. Andrew Pitbull Putnam. And this is my favorite one.
Yeah.
Doc Redman.
Just Doc Redman.
Which is really all you need. That's so good. Wow. Everybody's getting involved. Big tournament. Everybody's getting involved with the narratives this week. What else do we have, Sia?
I think that's it. We just got to go out and take down a DFS tournament. We've, you know, it's funny. You mentioned Adam Shank in there. I don't know how that guy's doing it, but you know, I've been mentioning him pretty much every show, and he manages to make the cuts, and he's like, ball striking is just horrific, and he's just putting.
He had like the longest, it was probably 18 months ago at this point, but he had like him and John Rahm were tied for the longest cut streak at one point. It was like 15 or 16. The guy makes cuts.
Some of these guys just figure it out.
I got three things. So two of them are what is in the description. There's links in the description for the fan one and done. There's a link in the description for the fans to sign up for the first cut bracket challenge. When the March Madness bracket drops, we'll all compete and we'll find something for the winner. The third thing, Sia, this could be a whole show on its own, but did you see that DraftKings now has the, what do they call them? Rainmakers available for golf. This is the first week where you can get your NFT packs, play your lineups for the PGA Tour.
Yeah, so I remember the Rainmakers from sometime last year, whether it was football or golf. I just don't get involved in that stuff. It's just not interesting to me. I don't do the NFT thing, the crypto stuff, the stuff I can't touch or feel, like money. I don't take the time to do it. Am I on the outside looking in here?
No, I think that's that you're in the majority. I think though, and I've generally not been an NFT guy. However, this to me is a good utility of NFTs, right? This is you get these NFTs, but you can use them to create lineups, right? And only so many people have a Rory McIlroy card. And then you put the lineups in and they've got prize just like a normal contest would be, right? So this to me is a good utility as opposed to like an art NFT or something like that, which I'm not going to get into, but like an actual utility, I believe this is a pretty good use of it. I don't know how involved I'll get, but I will at least keep an eye on it for the next couple weeks.
That's fair. And I don't know if you had another thing, but I do have something to throw it at you just real quick. If you're starting your lineup with, let's say, Rory or Scotty, to pick one of the two, and you pair it with Zal or Hovland, it's going to leave you with about 7,500. You can do that, or you can have Morikawa, Hovland, and Zalatoris, some combination of those guys, and it's going to leave you with the same amount of money. Because we had this discussion last week. Do you take one of the top three guys and a guy you really like in the lower 9K, upper 8K range, or do you take a few guys that are in that sort of upper 8, mid 9K range, you get three instead of the two?
I think I would take Scotty and Victor. I'm like kind of convinced Scotty's just going to win this thing. I just like it's crazy, man. We're going on a year now. We're going on a year where he is like the best tee to green player in the world, is in every golf tournament. And the ones he doesn't win, he very easily could have. It's getting nuts right now.
And he kind of came out of nowhere too. I mean, a couple of guys, including Rory, came out of nowhere at the API, but it feels like he's just like, oh, Scotty's having an okay tournament. And then all of a sudden he's got a putt to go to a playoff. It's like, doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah. I think if you gave me Scotty and Victor right now, I'd be pretty smitten with that.
Yeah. That's
what was the other option was what? Colin, Victor, and
Zalatoris.
Maybe like if I could get Homa, Victor, and Zalatoris, but I guess that'll cost me a little bit more.
But marginally more. Marginally. You could do that. Yeah.
That would kind of be interesting. I do worry a little bit that like Victor and Zalatoris feel very, very volatile. Colin, Victor, and Zalatoris feels like three of the most volatile golfers above $8,000 or whatever, right? Like I'm happy to take on risk. That feels like a lot of risk.
Yeah, that's fair. I get that.
That's my opinion. I don't know. What the hell do I know? All right. We'll be back on Tuesday for the Mega Preview Pod and obviously round by round recaps after every round of the Players Championship. Big thanks, producer Troy, doing all the hard work behind the scenes. Sia Najad available on Twitter at Sia Najad. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.